Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 683. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about volcanoes, black sand beaches and waterfalls, spiced rum, pirates, and French Creole as we go to the island of St. Lucia in the Caribbean. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about St. Lucia. I'd like to welcome to the show Kiwa Simpson from DiscoverSt.LuciaTours.com, who has come to talk to us about the island of St. Lucia. Kiwa, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to be here to speak about my beautiful island.
Well, and let's put it on a map first. Where is St. Lucia?
St. Lucia is in the middle of North America and South America, so that places us one of the islands in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. We're to the bottom of the Caribbean in the Lesser Antilles. So these are the smaller islands near the end of the Caribbean, the bottom section.
Great. And why should someone go to St. Lucia?
Well, we have a very beautiful island with lots of amazing activities to do, with lots of amazing things to do. It gives the visitor a perfect balance of relaxing activities like beautiful beaches and waterfalls, and also if they're into lots of adventure and history, we have that as well. So it's a very nice balanced Caribbean island, very beautiful. So another great reason to visit St. Lucia is that we have a World Heritage Site, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. That heritage site is located in the most beautiful town in our country, our island. It's called Soufre, and the World Heritage Site is a protected area in Soufre that has the world's only driving volcano, so has the twin mountain peaks that our island is very famous for. They're called the Pitos, and a few waterfalls are also in that UNESCO protected area, and coral reefs around the Pitos as well. So all of this area makes a World Heritage Site.
Excellent. We are definitely going to want to get to that, but where should we start? What kind of itinerary would you lay out for someone going to St. Lucia?
If you come to St. Lucia, I'm guessing you might stay for a really good stay. It might be about 5 to 7 days.
Okay.
Because we have so much to do here. So I would, as a local and a vacation planner, I would suggest that you start in Soufre. So this is where I said that has the wonderful UNESCO World Heritage Site and has the Pitos. There are two very steep mountains, twin peaks. They look almost identical, over 2,000 feet tall, and they make the World Heritage Site. They're what St. Lucia is known for. So you'd stay in Soufre in that area.
Well, and you mentioned that Soufre was the prettiest town in St. Lucia. It's a mountain town? It's not a beach town?
Well, there are a couple of beaches there, actually. That's okay. A wonderful thing. There are a couple of beaches there. So it's the best of both worlds together.
Okay.
So that's where a lot of the adventure in St. Lucia is located. And that's also where we have some of the most beautiful beaches. But they're mainly black sand beaches.
Okay. Shall we start with the mountains or the beaches? And then we'll go in a little more detail.
We'll start with the mountains.
Excellent.
I love the mountains more. So, as I said, there are the Pitos there. They were actually before we used to have native Indians who lived on the island, right?
And that would be the Carib?
Right, the Caribs and the Arawak. So they actually worshipped the pitos because they look so majestic. They're very steep and very tall. They actually worshipped them as the gods of fertility. That makes it even more interesting to want to climb. So when you come to St. Lucia, you need to climb the pitos. So it takes around 3 hours. You get a guide and you get to the top and you get amazing panoramic views of the island, the north, the south, the east, the west, and also our neighboring island called St. Vincent. So that's a must too in Soufre, right?
And I'm curious, Piton, does the word mean anything specifically?
No, it doesn't mean anything specifically. I don't know what it means specifically. I just know that's what we call it on our island. And it's actually the hardened core of eroded volcanic vents. So they're actually volcanic plugs, huge volcanic plugs.
Well, and you say climate. Are we climbing to the top? I mean, it looks more than adventurous for me because they're fairly steep. Are we climbing to a point where we're getting a view?
We're climbing right to the top.
Oh, my. Okay.
Of both. Yes.
So that seems like something I need to be in pretty good shape to do, or?
It depends on which pitot that you're climbing, right?
Okay.
When you look at the image, the first one you see is the steepest one. It's actually the shortest one. The first one you see is the shortest one, but it's steeper. It's called Petit Pitot because Petit in our French Creole means small. So since it's smaller, it's called Petit Pitot. But since it's so steep, it makes it much more difficult to climb. So most tourists, unless you're extremely adventurous and you love hiking, you won't do it, right? Then the one to the back is the wider, taller one. So because it's wider, the slope is much more gentle. So
okay.
Children climb, older adults climb, young people climb all the time. That's the more popular one for both us and our visitors to climb.
Okay. And is it a couple hours, a whole day? I don't know what kind of adventure I'm signing myself up for here.
It would take about 4 hours if you really want to take your time.
The whole way up and back.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is when you're ready to climb, if you climb with the ordained guides that the government has there, you get a 1/4 start up the mountain, so you don't climb from the very bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, so that makes it much easier.
And then when I come down and I'm hot and sweaty, I jump in the ocean because I'm at a beautiful beach.
Yep, yep, exactly.
And is there anything else we want to do on the mountainside before we talk about the beautiful beaches?
So when you come off the pitos, of course, you can always go to the drive-in volcano.
Well, you mentioned a drive-in volcano, and that sounds like a very bad idea, but not an active volcano.
It's not an active volcano. It's a dormant volcano, but there's actually hot pools of boiling volcanic mud, and there's vents sending up sulfuric gases, right? So, and that's because of all the magma underneath the caldera, like where the volcano used to be when it was active. Yep, so that heats up the water and causes it to boil, so you get to see like some geothermal activity there. And then the great thing about it is our favorite part of going to the mud baths is that the water from these boiling mud pools that has volcanic mud, it is streamed into some pools that make like a natural jacuzzi.
Okay.
So you could actually go inside of it. It's blackened because of the volcanic mud. So it has all these wonderful minerals that are great for the skin. It's usually about 115 degrees Fahrenheit, but it's bearable. So you go in there, you relax, and you put all the sulfur mud onto you. You let it sit out and get a nice clay mask done, natural, and then go back into the pools and you rinse off. So it's like a natural jacuzzi.
Now, getting into hot boiling pots of water is usually something one does with care. Is this something we do with a guide, or is this part of a park that is regulating that, yes, this one's safe to go into, don't go in that one?
Yeah, there are guides all around. And there are people at the mud baths. When you go to bathe, there are people actually there who help you get the mud, put it on you, guide you, tell you, okay, take your time to go down and take care of you, yeah. tourism island, so our government is very involved in many of the natural attractions and making sure that the tourists are safe.
Okay, what else are we doing while we're up there?
So whilst we're there, if you're not into the volcano, you could always go to some of the mineral baths and some of the warm waterfalls. So one of these places is called Sapphire Falls. It's lower down the volcano, the black water from the volcano. It actually falls down around 30 feet high. So it creates a black waterfall. And since that water is warm, it makes a black warm waterfall. And there's also a golden pool there. So the pool has a different mineral component from the one in the sulfur springs. It's still warm. It still comes from the volcano, but instead of being black, it's actually golden. So you go there, you just relax, enjoy yourself, enjoy the nature around. You could also get volcanic mud there to rub on you as well. And then afterwards, you go and shower under the warm waterfall. So that's another great thing to do there.
So when you say it's a black waterfall, so black water sometimes is used for black water rafting in New Zealand means you're going underground. In this case, you're talking about water that has so much volcanic silt in it that it is not clear?
Exactly. So it's filled with the volcanic mud from the volcano. Okay. Yes. And it's also heated by the volcano, so that makes it warm.
Got it.
And then in Sufra, we also have, we have so much. In Sufra, there's also a cold waterfall. So, well, many actually, but the closest one in the town is 15 minutes away from the center of town. So it's very easy to get to. It's right along the road. And it's called Toral Waterfall. And there you can go there and enjoy a natural, normal waterfall. It's very nice. It's very nice back massage.
And I'm going to ask you to repeat the name of the waterfall because I didn't catch that.
Okay. It's called the Toral Waterfall. Toral.
Could you spell that?
T-O-R-A-I-L-L-E.
Okay. Got it.
Sufra is the heart and soul of St. Lucia. That's where it has a great concentration of natural activities and natural attractions. So when you're in Sufra, you see that you were worried about how you'll be able to climb the pitos because from looking at them, they look like a killer task, right?
Right.
So you could actually get almost the same amazing views by going to some place in Sufra called the Tetpol Nature Trail. So Tet in our Creole means head. So Tetpol, so at the top, the mountain area there is called Tetpol. And it's a nature trail. So then you could, it's a nice gentle hike, no hills, no steep hills. You won't have to climb for 4 hours, just 30 minutes. And then you get to see amazing views of both of the pitos and the different points on the island, the south, the east, the north as well. So you get killer views for much less strenuous hike.
Okay. And that implies that there is one of the rocks at the top is called the Head of Paul?
Exactly. Okay. Very good. Yes.
All right. Does it look like some particular Paul or?
Because the land was owned by different colonial masters. A lot of the French colonial masters that owned the land during the time of slavery, the places that they owned would be still named after them. So, or the places would be owned after a local that eventually took over the land. So if you had said Paul, that means that area was usually, would be most likely owned by someone that was called Paul.
Got it. Okay. There's not a great rock up there that looks like Paul McCartney or something like that.
Okay. No.
Excellent. What else should we see while we're there?
So when we're in Sufra, I think I will take us down to almost by the beach. We have a botanical garden. And there they have many amazing plants that are tropical plants, so plants that you'd usually find growing naturally in our rainforest. Mm-hmm. And there, this is the home of the Diamond Fall. So it's a colorful waterfall. You cannot bathe in it, but it's a colorful waterfall, one of the most beautiful in our island that you can get to see and take some amazing pictures by. Yes, and when you're there as well, you learn about the plants, how we use them as locals for medicinal purposes. Yeah, it's very interesting.
All right, sounds good.
So you're ready to go to the beach now?
I am ready to go to the beach now.
So, Sufra, my favorite place in St. Lucia, has about four beaches. So there is one called Anshasni, when you just come into Sufre from the north, and there is a great coral reef there, right? It's a black sand beach. So you could go there to go and lay on the beach and just enjoy your day, and you could also snorkel. Now, in the middle of town itself in Sufre, there's a long stretch of black sand beach called Hummingbird Beach. Mm-hmm. So there again, wonderful snorkeling. As I said, even the coral reefs are protected by the UNESCO World Status, right?
Okay.
So there are amazing coral reefs there to snorkel. You could also get nice local food, taste our local cuisine, our local beer, get some souvenirs to remind you of St. Lucia when you're ready to go back. And there are also umbrellas and beach chairs there for you to just relax. This beach has a beautiful view of the first Piti Pito, the first one that you see,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in between the Pitos now is the killer. We have Sugar Beach. So this is a white sand beach. All the others are black sand. This one is a white sand beach, and it's found in the middle of the Pitos. And when you're there, you feel as if you're hugged by gods, because remember the Pitos, because they're so tall and majestic,
mm-hmm.
they put you in awe. Like when you see them, you want to bow down and to literally be in between them at their feet on a beach is amazing. The area with one of the most expensive resorts in the Caribbean because of that.
Okay.
So it's like you have one god on this side and one god on the other side, and this beautiful view of the Caribbean Sea on a beautiful beach. And that's also where you have the best snorkeling, in my opinion, as a local.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
In Sufre, that's easily accessible.
Well, and when you talk about the best snorkeling, snorkeling means usually a reef, and it means colorful fish and other life. Now, on an island that is this rugged and steep, I would expect the water to get pretty deep pretty quickly.
Now, in Sufre, that happens because Sufre is one of the deepest harbors in the Caribbean. It's just as tall as the Pitos going down.
Yeah, well, that's what I would expect.
But the thing about it is where the coral reefs are located, it doesn't get so deep so fast.
Okay.
So we still have lots of corals. They're able to get the sunlight so they can still flourish. Because of that, lots of colorful coral reef fishes, octopuses, lobsters, starfishes, and all of these amazing water marine animals are found there. So it's like seeing a real life aquarium.
Okay.
It's really good.
And that's both at Sugar Beach and at the first beach that you started us at, whose name I have already forgotten.
But we have Anshasni.
Yep.
So that means us usually means the bay. Right? So, or the beach.
Okay.
So, this is the Bay of Shasni.
Okay.
Okay, and then we have Hummingbird Beach, which also has corals that are directly in the middle of the town. And then in between the pitos, we have Sugar Beach.
Got it.
And there's a beach at the back of the last pito again. That's amazing. It actually is a mixture of gold and black sand because there's a golden mineral component. It's not gold, obviously, so all of the people who search for gold don't come running. But it actually has a mineral component in it that makes it shine and look like there's golden glitter among the black sand. And they have great corals there as well.
I don't know that I've heard of that in a beach before. That's interesting.
Yes. The whole area is a very amazing natural place with lots of activities to do. It's a blessing.
And you mentioned that at the Sugar Beach, at the White Sand Beach, there's the most expensive resort in the Caribbean. If I was looking to stay someplace a little less expensive, what options would I find in the area?
So it's not the most expensive in the Caribbean. It's one of them.
One of them. Okay.
Great thing about St. Lucia is that because of the internet, a lot of locals and expats are taking it upon themselves to prepare really nice guest houses and villas mm-hmm. for tourists. So Airbnb makes that very possible. So one of the best ways you could get to stay in Soufre without paying mega huge all-inclusive beachfront resort prices is to stay at an Airbnb in the town. And you'll be extremely close to everything, especially if you choose to rent a vehicle. You can go everywhere in Soufre on your own with your rented vehicle, or you just get a taxi, you know, from one of the locals, and they'll take you to all of the different places.
Well, and would you recommend we get a vehicle, or does that depend on how much of the island we want to see outside this?
I would recommend that you get a vehicle if you want to do more. Okay. Because I always find that when you travel with a local, you learn so much more about the island and the different attractions than you would if you just went around on your own.
Sure.
Plus you save yourself time, because then you wouldn't have to worry about getting lost and figuring out the roads, because we drive on the left. So you won't have to, you know, worry.
I'm trying to disagree with you there.
So you won't have to worry, you know, about sticking to the left and figuring out how to maneuver the roads and what are the signs. You know why again? Because we don't have extremely good GPS.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, take your phone and say, okay, I just use the phone to go everywhere. It will work for certain locations, but most places it doesn't. So I'd say if you really want to go and make the best out of your stay in Soufre, in St. Lucia, the best thing to do is to go with a local guide and pay the taxi, because it's very close to the attractions. You're already in Soufre, so the price won't be really high.
Well, and you say you don't have very good GPS. You also don't have all that many roads. I mean, the interior is very mountainous, so it doesn't look like it would be a particularly easy island to get lost on, because, you know, the mountains are in and the ocean is out. I think I could find my way, so...
You can rent. I won't discourage anybody from renting if they want to, but I think the better option, right, if you're able to afford it, is to get a local. But then you could always rent. There are many different rental companies. They're fully insured, so you won't have to worry that if you do an accident, you won't be covered for injuries and stuff. There are many different types of vehicles that you could use. I always recommend a vehicle with a higher bottom, like a Jeep.
Sure, that makes sense.
Because our roads are not smooth like American roads and very smooth like butter, you know, that you could just drive freely at whatever speed you want to. We have a few.
I'm not sure our roads are that smooth anymore either, but yes, that makes sense. You're a little less flat than a lot of our country. So, and as I see, I'm going to fly in if I fly in to the southern tip of the island. So I'm not going to fly into the area we've been talking about. And so I'm either going to get there by cab, or is there also bus service available?
Yes, you could get there by cab. There are many taxis actually waiting on the airport to transport you. You could also book in advance. So you get there by cab. And if you're going to higher, further locations, in St. Lucia, like you're going to the north, you could always use a helicopter transfer. It's a bit more expensive, but it's worth it. You get to see the island by air on your way to your hotel.
Okay. And that sounds like that might be a little expensive.
It's expensive. It might cost just below 200 US, but as I said, I'm just giving you all the options. Okay.
So I'm using it then as both transportation and as sightseeing on the way there. Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, and speaking of other parts of the island, you mentioned that this is your favorite part. And what is your second favorite part? Where else would you recommend I go if I have more than a couple days on the island?
So you have more than a couple days, you definitely need to go to the north. So the north is called, that area is called Grozile. And in Grozile, we have a town called Rodney Bay, and this is the tourist hub, right?
And you say Grozile. If I'm looking that in English, it looks like Gros Islet.
So Grozile means big island because we have an islet off the coast of Grozile.
Okay.
Because it was big, they called it, the French colonial people called it the place Grozile, right? So it's like a marker for the town, and the town just took the name. So yes, yeah, so there we have Rodney Bay, and that's where you have many different restaurants with different types of cuisine. We have Indian cuisine, Thai cuisine, Caribbean cuisine, local cuisine, right? European cuisine. So many different types of restaurants. They have nightclubs up there, a casino, shopping centers, marinas with yachts, and more restaurants.
Well, and do you have specific restaurants or nightclubs that you would recommend if we're heading up to Grozile?
If you want to really enjoy Grozile, on the Friday, our island has something called the Grozile Friday Night Street Party.
Okay, that sounds like fun.
On that night, the street gets lined with little food vendors and drink vendors, and then they sell lots of predominantly fresh seafood. So the fishermen bring in the fresh seafood that they caught, and then the locals would prepare it using our amazing spices that we have in St. Lucia. So you could get stuff like stewed octopus, you could get red snapper that's grilled, you could get blue malin that's grilled, lobster as well. My favorite is conch. Do you know what's conch?
Conch, sure.
Yes. So the conch, they would cut it up and grill it. And then when you're done, when they plate it for you, they put some nice local garlic sauce on it. And you'd get something called a bake. So it's a dough. It's rounded up and then flattened. And it's placed on the grill too.
So it's a grilled fry bread sort of thing.
Excellent. Yes. So then you could have the lubby. We call it lubby in our French Creole. So you could have the conch with the bake.
Okay, the bake.
Yep, it's called a bake. And then there's also lots of local rums available. We have something really cool that we call spice rum. So it's local rum from our rum distillery, white rum, pure alcohol. Well, not pure, but I mean strong white
strong.
Rum.
Okay.
Yes. And then they take trees, the backs of trees, the roots of different tropical trees in our forest, lots of medicinal trees, and spices such as cinnamon, nutmegs, bay leaves, and they add it together in the bottle and let it soak for a month. And then they sell it. They add some honey to give it a little sweet taste, and then you take a shot and you're very good for the night. Get some nice local rum. Yes, locally made. St. Lucian style.
Okay.
Yep. And then you dance in the street. There's nice Caribbean music, soca music, dancehall music. Sometimes they play American pop as well, old school rap, all different types of music. And the locals and the tourists come together. And we dance with each other in the street until 2 a.m. when the police says, okay, it's time to go home now. So that's an awesome thing to do in Grozile when you're there. My favorite restaurant, like meaning traditional restaurant in Grozile, in Rodney Bay, is called Spices of India.
Okay.
So it's owned by an Indian chef. His wife is local. And he hired some other Indian chefs to come down, and they prepared the most delicious Indian food ever. And because some of the Indian food that he prepares, the ingredients are kind of similar to what we have on the island. So he ends up using some of our local ingredients to create the food, and it's amazing. It's my favorite place to visit. I always recommend there. The decor is also very similar to what you would find in his home country. So that's one of the places you should definitely visit if you go to Rodney Bay.
Okay.
Yeah, Rodney Bay also has a few very beautiful beaches. The main beach in Rodney Bay is called Redway Beach, and that beach has some of the best water sports in St. Lucia. So there you can go jet skiing, you can go wakeboarding, you can go parasailing, you can go sailing on a little hobby cat. There's also a place in the beach called the Splash Island Water Park. And there you could go, you know, the American Ninja Warrior show?
Yes.
Where they have all the different hurdles. Is that underwater, but less extreme?
Okay.
So younger people usually enjoy it. But then if you just want to relax, it's a great beach to relax. Excellent view. So also in Grezile, we have that island. Remember that islet I told you, the big islet?
Right.
It's called Pigeon Islet. And there is where, during colonial times, so around 200 years ago, when the English and the French were battling for St. Lucia, they actually battled 14 times.
I wanted to get to that, yeah. There's a reason why you're talking about the French influence, but you drive on the left and you're telling me in English, which is, it's complicated. You've got the official language is English, but 95% of the people speak French Creole. It was French, it was English, it was French, it was English, it was French, it was English.
As I said, they were battling for St. Lucia a lot because, you know, during that time, during colonial times, these big European empires were looking for new land, right? In the New World after Christopher Columbus discovered our side of the world. So then, because sugar was such a big money maker at that time,
right?
In St. Lucia, you would get lots of fertile land where you could easily plant sugarcane, the right climate and everything. And that's where they also brought in our enslaved ancestors from Africa, right?
Yeah, when most of the native population died off because of the European diseases. So yeah, that's where a lot of the African slavery came in. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it.
Yeah. So then because of that now, and how important it was to have a Caribbean island to produce sugarcane. They were like, St. Lucia is mine. No, St. Lucia is mine. And they went back and forth, killing each other and confusing our enslaved ancestors because it's like one time it's English, one time it's French, one time it's English. But the amazing thing, as you said, that the French was able to survive. Even now, we still have our French Creole. And a lot of the places on our island, like Grezile, like Soufre, because Soufre means sulfur in the air in French because of the volcano. So like Soufre, like Chozel, Mikoud, all of these places are French influence and that has survived hundreds of years later, even after the British officially took over.
Well, and the British officially took over for the last time 205 years ago. So there has been a longer time period recently of first British rule and then obviously independence. Why are you driving the left? But yeah, it's interesting that the French did not go away.
Yeah, exactly. As I was saying, so on that islet, because of where it's located, the furthest north part of the island, and before St. Lucia is Martinique, which is still French-owned. Okay?
Yep.
So then the British made a fort with cannons and guns and a house, kitchens, and also ovens to prepare limestone so they could build the fort, right?
Right.
They had that there in Pigeon Island, and they would look out on top of Pigeon Island at the tallest point and look out to Martinique and see when the French warships from Martinique would come to try and attack the English. And from there, they would bomb them and fight with them and shoot them down. Actually, that area is like a living museum because there's still the cemetery of the British soldiers 200 years ago. There are actually writings from the British soldiers, which is very moving as a human being to see that when you go to the top of the fort and you look at the concrete, you could see 1820 and you would see the name John Peter, right? And So it would let you know that this person was there in truth. Like you could touch them and go back in history and imagine them being there, leaving England, which is very cold and very different, coming to this warm, humid climate with mosquitoes and new food and to come and fight and build a fortress and stuff. And you would actually see the writings from them still in that area. So there is remains of the fort. As I said, there are still some of the old cannons from 200 years ago. You would also find the old kitchen there. So it wouldn't be intact, of course. It's not exactly the same way it used to be, but ruins of it. Yep. So when you get there, you could go around with a guide and they would tell you all about how their life was as soldiers in that time in the Caribbean, in St. Lucia, fighting back and forth with the French and not knowing if they'll ever go back home. But even before that, that islet in St. Lucia, it was actually used by a pirate about 300 years before the British even came to try and fight with the French. So there was a pirate there. His name is Jean Dubois because he was missing one foot. So he had one normal foot and one wooden foot. And he used to stay there and look out for all the other ships passing around, coming to the New World. And then he would attack them with his men, take over the ship. And either the people would be initiated into his camp or he would kill them or use them as slaves for him and his fellow men. Yep, so there's a lot of history on that island right there. Lots of Caribbean history, and you could touch it and see it and feel it.
Well, and one thing that's a little confusing for me is when I look on Google Maps, the island is no longer an island. Is it an island and Google Maps is wrong, or has it now? Is it now a peninsula?
So it was an island 30 years ago, but we still call it Pigeon Island, Pigeon Islet. But our first prime minister built a causeway. So there is a long stream of beach that was built to connect the mainland to Pigeon Islet.
Got it.
And that long stream of beach now, that causeway now has around 3 resorts with sandals also there, one of the best sandals in St. Lucia.
Got it.
Also right there, beautiful golden sand beach, wonderful place to come and bathe and enjoy the day and just relax. And Pigeon Islet itself has 3 beaches of its own.
Got it. Okay. When you say the sandals is a wonderful place to enjoy the beach, I don't know what the laws are in St. Lucia. Can I enjoy the beach of a resort even if I am not staying there?
So that's an amazing question. Lots of visitors ask it. In St. Lucia, all beaches are public.
Okay. I wondered if that was the case from what you said. Yep.
You don't have to go in front of sandals. Of course, there's little, like you could see where the resort starts. So then somebody might be intimidated to go there to and stuff. But there are long stretches that's available to us from in that same location that you could go freely. You could always go in front of the resorts also if you want to, but there is not a need unless you really want to, and then that's okay. You can totally do that. Yep, so it's public. I think St. Lucians would throw a riot if one of our beaches became private.
Well, and I'm familiar with that in Hawaii. It's the same thing where every beach has to have public access and public parking, even if it's a resort. But that is not true everywhere in the world. And so that's why I wanted to clarify that.
Yes, that's a great question. But our beaches are like a big part of our life,
sure.
Our culture as an island people. And to tell us we cannot go there anymore, ooh, oh my God, looking for a war.
What is going to surprise me about going to St. Lucia, other than the pronunciation, which threw me at first before we started recording this?
What's going to surprise you? Well, it depends on what type of stuff surprises you. Maybe you'll be surprised on how windy our roads are.
I noticed that.
Yeah, because it's a mountainous island, especially when you're going towards the south and the southwest, the roads can become very windy.
Well, as an example of that, for instance, we mentioned that you're going to fly into the airport in the south, and then you're, you know, if you drive up to the region that we were talking about, Soufri, then it's only 34 kilometers, not even 34 miles, so 18, 19 miles, and it's a 53-minute drive.
What you're talking about is the north in Rodney Bay, yeah.
Yes,
so when you have to come up to Rodney Bay, it's a pretty long drive, but the island is so beautiful. It's totally worth it, especially if you want to have a nice relaxing time and see someplace new and experience some of the amazing things that we said there is to experience on our island. It's totally worth it, I find.
Excellent. Well, before we get to some of my wrap-up questions, is there other things that you want to really highlight that we can't stop talking about St. Lucia until we tell people about what?
Definitely in St. Lucia, especially if you're a history lover, you should definitely visit our city called Castries. So some of the things you could see in the city is some of the old French architecture in the buildings and stuff like that. You would see the very pyramid-shaped roofs and some of the old French style of Caribbean building.
To put that on a map, we're northern part of the island, but further south than Groseillers.
Right. We're like northwest, right? So then, and also there is the amazing Cathedral of Immaculate Conception.
Okay.
So it's one of the biggest Caribbean Catholic churches. And there is where the first time in Catholic history that the Holy Family, the Bible's Holy Family, Jesus, Joseph, and Mary, were actually portrayed in the image of a black man, so a black family. And the artist who did that was one of our premier artists on the island. He actually designed our flag as well. And he did that because, he said, because of our slavery past, because our population is predominantly African, right? African heritage, black. So because of our enslaved past, for the people to be able to embrace the Catholic religion, considering that the Bible was used to enforce the slavery, for example, slaves, obey your master as you would obey the Lord, right?
Right.
So, and since Jesus always was portrayed as white and you're looking up to him, the only way that he believed that we as a population would be able to embrace the Catholic religion after a history of slavery would be if we could see God reflected in our image. So it's almost similar to what's happening in the world now, where people want to see representation.
Mm-hmm.
So he did something radical by placing a God that was usually portrayed in the image of the white man and painting him in the image of the people in the island, which are predominantly black.
Well, I think he did something unusual. I don't know if I'd go as far as radical, considering how many non-Jewish Jesus I've seen pictures of.
Okay. Unusual. Okay. Well, he was unusual for...
Right, exactly.
...our part of the world and our culture. So then he got a lot of backlash. Well, the owners of the church at the time were kind of worried about it. But when Pope John Paul actually came down and he saw it, he gave him a Vatican medal for it, because it was so different. And it was, for us, it was quite radical and new and revolutionary.
Uh-huh.
So in that church, you will also see a lot of black saints portrayed. So there aren't many, of course, but the few they are, he made sure that he painted them and placed them there so that the people of the island would see themselves reflected in the religion. So it wouldn't seem like a religion for other people and not them. He also painted the beautiful paintings that he created on the windows with stained glass. And of course, the nuns and Mary and these individuals are painted in the image of black people. And at the top in the roof are beautiful paintings of European saints that were painted from France 100 years ago. So there's a mixture of the people of the island taking ownership and taking their place in the religion, and there's also the traditional European elements of the religion mixed together in one in the church. It's very colorful. So it's a very light church. It doesn't have, in the church is very light. It has a light, airy feel to it because it doesn't have the traditional huge round wall pillars that other Catholic churches would have. It has a lot of wooden elements. Yes, and it's very tall, very colorful. And then when you actually come there and you could see the light passing through the colorful windows and you see all the different art and the mixture of European and African influenced art in the church as a Catholic church. It's really stunning. And then in Castries also, there is the Derek Walcott Museum. Just to let you know, St. Lucia has the highest number of Nobel laureate, Nobel Prize winners, Nobel laureates per capita in the world.
Okay.
So do you understand what that means? That means we have the most Nobel laureates based in the world based on the amount of people that we have on our island. Yes. So we have two, and both of them are from Castries. So there is a museum that's actually celebrating the last one. He was a poet, a painter, and a playwright. And it was the original, his original house before the town started getting developed and stuff. So they remade it in the same French style. And you can see all of his paintings in there, and his poems and his art, talking about Caribbean life and talking about local heroes and local stories, and presenting it in a manner that it can appeal to mass audiences. So you could go and read some of his poems and learn about his life. He was a very influential person when it comes to art in our island. So if you love history and you love architecture and you're open to learning about Caribbean architecture and learning about Caribbean history, you should definitely pass in Castries.
Well, and we should say that if I'm going to arrive via cruise ship, that's where I'm going to arrive at St. Lucia.
That's exactly where you will be.
Excellent. Which also means that I might want to check the cruise ship schedule before I schedule my visit to there to potentially go on a day. If I'm not there by cruise ship, go on a day when the cruise ships are not in port.
Yep. But most of the time when people from cruise ships come to St. Lucia, they usually head to Souffre because that's the heart and soul of St. Lucia. That's where the World Heritage Site is. Yep.
Excellent. Well, I want to start wrapping this up with a couple questions. So I'm standing in the prettiest spot in St. Lucia. Where am I standing and what am I looking at?
You're standing at the viewing point in Souffre, and you're looking at the town of Souffre with the two gods standing at the edge of the island, towering like the powerful, glorious, amazing beings that they are, called the Pitos, the twin mountain peaks.
Excellent. If you had to summarize St. Lucia in just three words, what three words would you choose?
A beautiful nature island.
Excellent. And our guest again has been Kiwa Simpson from Discover St. Lucia Tours.com, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But Kiwa, if we wanted to send people to your best resource for helping them plan their trip to St. Lucia, where should we send them?
Okay, so if you're interested in coming to St. Lucia as a local, I created a free guide for your listeners. So
excellent.
If they're interested in coming, that free guide would actually point them and let them know what are the best resources they could use to put together their vacation in St. Lucia. So in that free guide, they would find out what are the best places online to get places to stay in St. Lucia, what are the best places online to get our best stalls, so they could pick excellent tours to really experience our island and our culture, what's the best type of money to use when they come here, what's the best way to get around St. Lucia easily, and a few other points that would really help steer them in the right direction to create a beautiful stay on island. So I think that would be really helpful.
Terrific. And Kiwa is going to ask you to get on her mailing list to get that guide. Don't worry about that. I'm sure you'll love to hear more from her. Kiwa, thank you for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for your home country of St. Lucia.
Yes, thank you very much. It was such an honor. I had fun talking to you about St. Lucia. I always have fun talking about my island, and I hope that some of your listeners will come to visit because it's really an experience worth having, and I hope you come to visit as well.
In news of the community, I heard from Jeff Ulfs, former park ranger and friend of the show, former guest as well. You may remember that in the show that we did on Virunga National Park, we mentioned something about the fund and the project to support the widows of park rangers. Well, Jeff filled in some more information. Just listen to Virunga, episode 682. Sadly, more rangers are killed in Virunga every year than any other national park in the world. 13 of my peers this year alone, with one as recently as November 13th. One thing I need to correct is Virunga is not the second national park in the world. It's probably the 12th. Australia, Canada, and New Zealand had national parks before Virunga. Thanks so much, Jeff. And obviously the issue that the park rangers have there is the poachers, and that is a serious problem. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment at this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be